podcasting to the world.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace. That was Mike Williams. And this is the Gospel Revolution.
Someone apocalypse to me. I never felt like this before. Can't see evil anymore. Could have sworn I was free before. But this is what I've been waiting for. Welcome to freedom.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Thursday, August 17, 2017. Broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, thanks to the generosity of GR executive producers Jimmy and Carrie McCollum. But right now from Palm Beach Gardens in Florida, bringing you more consistent, persistent, and repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Mr. Williams, how are you?
Good morning, Don Bartlett. I'm doing well here in South Florida. No hurricanes headed our way. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful day.
That's a rare day in Florida. No hurricanes coming. No cyclones. No tornadoes. No whirligigs. No willy-willies out in the ocean coming to hit you.
Well, it's been 12 years since South Florida's been hit by a hurricane, so...
So it's your turn. Your turn. It's actually your turn for a one in a 1,000-year event.
We're in line. Yes.
Yeah.
Standing in line, waiting anxiously.
That amazes...
How are you there?
Oh, I'm doing well, mate. It's a lovely day here. It's wonderful. We, all of my bill collectors have died. My bank manager is lost in the Himalayas and they can't find him. I'm in great shape. Oh, and Michael, I have to tell you, I've been working on our database.
Yeah.
And the names I'm seeing in the database belie belief. So I'm seeing people like, people that have long since parted ways. Joseph Prince, I came across yesterday, and I said to Laura, Joseph Prince is in our database. And she said, what is he doing? And then I said, probably the same as Mike Warnke. Now, Mike and Susan Warnke are in our database at one time. Now, do you remember Mike Warnke?
I do.
Yeah. And, I mean, he fell into some bad times, but... And that we'll just leave that one there. But he was that Christian comedian who, mate, he made me laugh, that guy. But some of the names in your database, I mean, I'm starting to see who of all of those heroes of modern televangelism actually have given in to us at one time or another and then suddenly stopped.
Well, they certainly weren't in the database unless they signed up for it. We never took names and just added them. That has never happened. Unless somebody did that themselves, they weren't in there. So, yeah, I'm sure that is an interesting read. Who would think a database would be an interesting read?
It's like trying to read the telephone book, mate. It's a hell of a cast, but not much of a storyline.
These have storylines. That's the odd thing about it. And I'm sure there's some that you don't recognize that I would, that would bring back all kinds of memories.
Oh, man, I had the most fun reading through the churches and the fellowships that were involved in the data with us at one time. I mean, why did people pick some of these Living Word International?
I know.
I wish I had it open right now. I'd read some of them off, but it's, yeah.
We'll have to do a PowerCast of reading the database. Huh?
Sunshine Alley Family Fellowship. I mean, Victory International, and it's a little church of 20 people. I love it. Anyway,
Gospel Revolution.
We had some emails this week.
Awesome. Let's get in the bag.
I want to start with one that we read out last week, and Michael Turi said, and we read this last week, any thoughts on Luke 16:16 concerning the law and the prophets were until John? Well, Michael Turi, your question turned into last week's PowerCast.
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
And I hope we answered it. I mean, we had a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it. So just letting you know, family, you can send us questions and we'll drop everything in order to answer them. That's just the way we roll.
Mm-hmm.
I got an email this week from one Michael LeBourne Williams.
Yeah.
And he said, during times of universal I got to stop that American accent. During times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. George Orwell. Now, the amazing thing about this, Mike, is, and you just sent it to me out of the blue, and how true it is.
Mm-hmm. Bears repeating. Read it one more time.
During times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act.
And, you know, when I read this, I thought, wow, you know, this is another good reason that we call this the gospel revolution. Why is it a revolution? Well, Orwell would have called this a revolution because it's telling the truth in the times of deceit. This issue of making a stand for the gospel and not only turning away and not associating with Christianity, but renouncing Christianity because there is nothing but deceit in it. It is filled with deceit. They take all of these monumental points of scripture, such as the virgin birth, the life, the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus, and come to no accurate conclusions about them. None. Zero.
Well, some people even say they never occurred. So, I mean, you can't arrive at any conclusion then.
And that's what happens when you do not arrive at the right conclusion about these facts.
Well, some people, when they're searching for the truth, some people take what they know to be true and join the dots from there. Other people take a conclusion with which they are very happy and satisfied and comfortable, and then they try to draw the dots to support that conclusion.
Yeah, and you know, it is really amazing that the gospel revolution stands in such a position that we not only affirm these basic tenets of the gospel that I just mentioned, but we know why they are important. We know why even creation is important. We know why the book of Genesis is important. We know why a virgin birth is a part of the essence of the understanding the gospel. Now, even if you don't think that this actually ever happened, even if you don't think that the world was created by God, you can't take it out of the story at all because the entire story falls apart.
What story?
The story of the creation of the world, the introduction of a Savior, the virgin birth, the life of Christ, his death on the cross, his burial, and his resurrection.
And this story, Mike, the big picture of it, what is it?
Well, the big picture, of course, we've been talking about for quite some time now. And not only have we been talking about it for quite some time, it keeps getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that God and Christ in Christ decided before the creation of the world made a plan and placed the entire human race in Christ and he in the human race, and that plan had to be brought to fruition through virgin birth. It had to be brought to fruition through the life, death, his burial, his resurrection. So that the big picture was the redemption of the whole world. And if you remove any one part of this story, the entire story falls apart.
So when you look at people like Bishop John Spong or Bishop yep. Carlton Pearson and others, mm-hmm. what we're looking at are people with a grasp on the big picture, but a lot of it eludes them still because they're extracting or deleting some of these points that you're referring to.
Yeah, they don't like the process. And there's no way that you can get to the conclusion without the process.
Yeah, I see that every day on Facebook. No, God was never angry. No, this atonement, this bloody, it goes on. And it's like people have become freed from Christianity to a degree only to become trapped up in the minutiae, bogged down in needless philosophical searching almost.
Well, and it boggles my mind that we are so shocked that blood, that death would have a part of the story when without it, mankind isn't involved.
Sometimes I think that, remember that movie, The Lion King? That got far closer to the truth, the cycle of life.
Yeah.
Life, death, life. Even Jesus said, unless a grain of wheat drops into the ground and dies, it's worthless.
Well, exactly. And God got into this whole thing through the regular cycle of life. And we just get so shocked. Oh, God could never have done that. God would never do that. So God is going to come into this situation completely unaware of it and completely unfamiliar with the experience of it.
Mm.
And that is the point Paul made about Jesus, is that he was in all points tempted like as we are. He was in all points, and death is one of the points. Suffering is one of the points. The whole point is that, you see, we still want to have a separate deity from humanity. That's what you hear coming out of these things.
We, as the human race, don't even want to consider ourselves as a deity.
Exactly. And that's what these folks are having problems with, in accepting the humanity of the deity. Because we can't accept the deity of the humanity. This is where the whole breakdown takes place. Humanity cannot accept its deity, and humanity cannot accept the humanity of the deity. And this is the gospel story, this fusion of deity and humanity together as one. It's called a new creation. Wonder why?
Spread the religion of the rhythm of life.
We got some feedback from our new intro. How do you like our new intro?
You know, it is good. And I'll have to tell you, I do like it. I know that we did get an email, and I understand the email. I started thinking about all of the shows that I grew up with, you know, and their intros, all of the intros to, you know, I Dream of Jeannie, the intro to Seinfeld, the intro to MASH, and I don't know if it would have been the same show if they had changed the intro, so I understand the email. What do we do, Donnie? What do we do?
Well, Doug Salonen wrote us and said, Mike Williams Ministries, what was up with the intro on the podcast? I look forward to the Do You Remember When at the start.
I know.
Now, let me just, because I'm going to defend myself, you know. But
go right ahead. I don't mind.
Coming out fighting here. you know, I like that Do You Remember When at the start too, Doug. But the problem is I can't find it. And I need it clean. I need a clean, clear copy of it in order to superimpose it over any music we use. Now, I put out an SOS, I put it out on this show, and I put it out on Friends of Mike Williams, and no one can help me. Now, somebody did tell Jeff Robertson did mention that it was one of the Galatians series. Well, I listened to the whole of the Galatians series in one day. Let me tell you, that was a bit of work. And I'm talking about the early 2000 Galatians series. I think it was 2000, 2001. Then I listened again to the 2009 series, and I still haven't found it. So if anybody out there knows where to find the Do You Remember When, and I really pulled the voiceovers for the new intro out of my hat. It was just out of something that Mike was teaching on predestination. And I would so happily go to the Do You Remember When at the start, Doug, if I could only find it. So maybe some of you people can start listening to some of our older material and let me know where we got that from.
Well, you remember I told you where I remember it being from.
And
do you remember?
I do, and it had something to do with Pep Washburn, who denies all knowledge of it.
Which was, it would be in the last series I did in Wisconsin with Pep Washburn.
And he does not remember it in the least.
But where are the recordings of that conference?
Was he drunk? Maybe he was drinking at the time. Maybe you were drinking at the time.
Anything is possible. But the fact is, we've not listened to that series that came from that conference to see, because I don't know what I taught on there.
Look, if you're behind the eight ball here, I'm even further behind it. So go easy on me, will you, Mr. Williams? Now, Marcel Rose, who has standing in this area because he's the man who puts together a radio show, 24/7 Gospel Revolution Radio out of the Netherlands, and he does a massive job there. He says, wow, what an intro. And this one is even hi-fi, glorious, sounds great, welcome to freedom. And then the lady who wrote that song, Kate Benham.
Yeah.
She said, wow, I love it. Well, of course she would. She wrote the song. So I get that, Kate, but I really appreciate your affirmation there. So much for our intro. That's the story of our intro. I'm not going back on it. We're going to keep this intro. We're going to improve this intro. If anyone can tell us where the voiceover for the first intro came from, I will happily switch that up. And we're going to improve it a little bit. And we are also not going to orphan the old intro. You'll hear it now and then. It'll come up and you'll say, oh, yeah, MASH. I dream of Jeannie, or whatever it is you want to think about.
Oh, be ye glad, oh, be ye glad, every death that you ever had has been paid up in full by the grace of the Lord. Be ye glad, be ye glad, be ye glad.
This week, Michael, we got a couple of new testimonials.
Wonderful.
And the first one comes from Danny Rogers, and he wrote, Dear Mike, they get so fresh with you, don't they, Mike? They don't say Mr. Williams anymore, or Pastor, or Reverend. They just, hey, dear Mike, like you're just their friend or something.
I know.
This is Danny. I just want to let you know how much I've enjoyed your podcasts. The most recent one on abominations was a true beauty.
Mm.
The real reason why I'm texting you is to let you know how my daughter Jessica is doing. If you recall, Jessica has a psychoaffective disorder and gave birth to her baby, Danica, almost 2 years ago. On your podcast, you had not only answered her questions concerning her disorder, but you encouraged her deeply as no one else could. Jessica is living on her own now and working while raising Danica. I have never seen Jessica more happy than she is now. She has her baby and a great understanding of the gospel. Thank you a million. Your friend, Danny.
Wow, Danny, goodness, I'm certainly glad that whatever took place at that point in time was helpful to Jessica, to whatever degree it was helpful. That's what we're here for, is to bring relief. You know, that's what the term ministry actually means. It means to bring relief. So if we did bring relief through something that we said, then that's what we call ministry. When you write us back, and it gives such encouragement that brings relief. So you're ministering right back to us and finding out what happened and what is going on right now. We're very happy for Danica and Jessica, and also for you, Danny. I've got a feeling that the name Danica came from your daughter out of a love for her father. Sounds a little like Danny to me. So, so congratulations. It's wonderful to have a grandchild that carries some part of your name. That's really wonderful.
Oh boy, when we get letters like that, we just say long live the gospel.
Yes, exactly.
Here is our second one from Ray Allen, by the way, who we heard from first time last week, never heard from him before, and it started with a first-time donation through PayPal, so it was one of those very memorable moments. Today he says, "Hello, Michael. Hi, Don. It's a pleasure to be able to share my journey of freedom from slavery in Christianity." It's a pleasure to be able to share my journey of freedom from slavery in Christianity. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. Now Gospel Revolution is home sweet home to me.
He goes on and says, "I hope you guys are doing wonderful as you read this email. We are, and thank you. I must wish both of you happy birthday with long life." I think maybe he's Chinese. "Oh, I wish you both happy birthday with long life."
Don't know where that came from.
that came from me. Yeah,
that's why I don't know where that came from.
The master of distraction. He says, "My journey starts when I was doing what Christianity calls putting the kingdom first."
Wow. Flashbacks.
Oh, boy. I remember back in the day, God first, family second. Now, thank God it's family first, God second, because how can God be first when he's part of me? Anyway, I'm getting distracted again. "My journey starts when I was doing what Christianity called putting the kingdom first. It was on a Saturday doing my chores, cleaning the lawn and church for Sunday service. But I was not satisfied with what the church pastor was teaching because it all seemed impossible for me to enjoy life the way I used to before I went to church. I was on my lawnmower when I get a call from my sister living out there in Florida." Hold on, Don. I'll reveal her in a few. Maybe she's single. She wants a husband.
That's not any good news for you.
Well, you know, sin first and ask forgiveness later. She asked how I was doing, which I replied, "Wonderful." Then I tell her, "I don't think I can keep up with this anymore. I said I was tired." She asked what I was doing so I could take a break. But when she understood it was not with everyday work, it was with my Christian walk, she knew what I was talking about because you guys already had impacted her life with the gospel. Oh, wow. To make a wonderful long story short, she asked if she could send me a teaching on Romans in context, which I'm not used to that kind of teaching, especially from the Bible. No, very few people are. It's a point here and a point there and a lot of bull in between. It's called longhorn preaching. Well, she already had all of Michael's teachings. He did read from the Bible, and she not only sent me the book of Romans, but all she had. Michael and Don, I was in shock. All I could have said to myself is, "Oh, my God."
Wow.
But she didn't stop there. She sent me your book one. I read books, trust me, but when I started on your book, it was like my favorite dessert. I couldn't stop. I searched for you on YouTube, and I found your teachings on the high priest, and again, was even a bigger shocker. Ever since my conversations with my sister, just thanking her for sharing the good news, gospel, it goes on and on, right up to this moment, that I don't miss a PowerCast. I tell you. There are so many points in this letter, Mike, that all we can say is, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. He goes on and says, my Christian walk was all around Joel and Creflo. Hey, you know, yesterday I was in the car listening to, was it, I think it was July 2006, and you and I had done a, we did a special on our friend Richard John Mull. And in it, Mr. Mull said, you know that guy Craplo Dollar? He just teaches crap, and I can't even do his voice, but it's as funny as a hatful of f***. And he says,
"So that guy Crapolo, was that his name that we listened to on?"
Yeah, Crapolo Dollar. That's exactly
right.
Yeah,
he's full of crap because you know Paul said in Galatians 2:21, "I do not frustrate the grace of God, for if righteousness comes by the law, Christ is dead in vain." And he's preaching man's righteousness to be right with God and get blessings. And in Galatians 5:4, Paul said, Christ has become of no effect unto you, who are justified by the law, you are fallen from grace. So he's trying to encourage people to fall from grace. And he's full of crap. And he needs to know that he's full of crap. So I condemn the words that came out of his mouth in a teaching. I just condemn those words.
We're united in that condemnation, Richard Ball.
My Christian walk was all around Joel and Creflo. These were the guys I listened to the most, but now it is so hard to sit and watch them controlling the poor people in every way possible that they could. Michael, I'll conclude here because I can go on and on. I wish I had donated all I did with those ministries to your ministry. But trust me, it's just the first time you'll see a donation from me, but I have all the books and the Bible you guys recommend, and now my appreciation is to give as I could, so you can continue sharing the gospel to the world. Thank you so much for listening to me. Much love, Rayford. Oh, Don, her name is Sherry. Sherry. La, 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 Sherry. He said, Don, her name is Cherry. Smile. Still have no idea what that means.
Well, my goodness, you know, the strange thing about these testimonials is they all say exactly the same thing, personalized to the individual. They're all the same story. The thing that we went through with Christianity is everybody's testimony was different. It was, oh man, you know, I used to be a this, I used to be a that, I used to be a this, I did that. And now this has changed, that's changed. And with the gospel, it's all the same story every single time. Now, there's one thing that I'm beginning to see is that these testimonies are all detailing their recovery from PTCD. Yeah. PTCD?
Okay, I know you want me to ask. What, Michael? PTCD, what is it? It sounds like something that you should get medication for.
Post-traumatic Christian disorder.
First you come up with CPR, now it's PTCD. Okay.
PTCD, and we help people who are suffering from PTCD, and we're experts at it. We are a recovery clinic for PTCD.
Is that like,
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free?
Yes.
Or once I was blind, but now I can hear, see, or something like that.
Oh, my. Well, thank you so much, Rayford, for the email. We are very appreciative. And you really are describing recovery from post-traumatic Christian disorder. It's a lot of people are suffering from it around the planet. And we want to help people get through this. It's a terrible disorder, but there is help. And the gospel, with the CPR of the gospel, you can overcome PTCD by the CPR of the gospel.
I'm going to ask our friend Sean Smith. Now, Sean is particularly acquainted with this condition, but he also is acquainted very much with PTSD.
Yes.
As a previous Marine sergeant. Well, when I say previous, once a Marine, always a Marine, I guess.
Exactly, yes. Semper Fi.
So, Sean Smith, maybe you might consider becoming our chief surgeon of PTCD.
Exactly. And, the thing of it is anybody that's gone through it can help others who are going through it.
Mm.
And believe me, you can get completely on the other side of PTCD. Now, there will be flashbacks. You'll have them. You'll hear little statements, and suddenly there'll be a flashback, and it can be traumatic. And I'm being really very completely serious here. Suddenly there'll be a chill go down your spine because it'll remind you of a place, a time, words said to you, things that brought you into complete bondage.
Sometimes you'll just be flicking through the channels.
Yes, and it can happen at any time. You can just be flipping through the channels. You can be watching a regular movie. You can be watching the news and hear how that a tornado missed a house because somebody prayed. Or a tornado hit a house because somebody didn't pray.
Gospel Revolution.
Well, we recently released a series. It was a new series, one that you, last time you were in Calgary, you recorded it. And we made it freely available to everybody and as many copies as you need to give away to all of your pastor friends. And that was called Predestined to Live. Last week, as you know, our technical difficulties made us use two old podcasts from the Seven Pillars of Wisdom. And they were so darn good, and we received so much happy acclaim from them that we decided, well, actually, we didn't decide it. I just decided it without even consulting with the boss. I decided I was going to put out some more free series as specials. And the first one I'm going to do, which means, by the way, that I'll be re-editing these old ones, taking out a couple of things that are ancillary to the core of the message and presenting them as a series. And in this series, the first series I think will be the Seven Pillars of Wisdom, Mike. Mm-hmm. And that way we can have up on the front page at all times our core series. Now, when I say core, everyone comes into the gospel from a different place. And they all say, well, the place they came in should be the place everyone comes in.
Yeah.
But that'd be every podcast we ever made.
Exactly.
Every series we ever made, every single item. Yeah. So we're just going to put out things which we ourselves like, which I think would be things like Predestined to Life, the Seven Pillars of Wisdom, the Five Things That Changed at the Cross. Just some things we've done, and we've done really, really well, and we just want to make them star attractions on our front page. So stay with us, and you'll see that front page changing, as it always does, more and more. So this week, from the Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution Facebook group page, if you look carefully, you might see our new Wall of Fame. Are you on it? The Wall of Fame is based on the engagement of people on our group website. So have a look. You're probably on it. And if you're not,
mm-hmm.
get a crack on and make a comment. Give us something to talk about.
Exactly.
Or talk about something that somebody else has posted. Staying in the Friends of Mike Williams in the Gospel Revolution Facebook group, Marcel Rose this week shared an audio book, and he said this is Don Bartlett's favorite book. And, well, it's like saying what's the best message to give people for the first time. This book happened to tear down some of the brickwork of Christianity for me when I started to see how pagan most of our Christian constructs were. You see it in every church. I defy you to find a church in which some of these constructs don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Pagan Christianity, great. Go to the Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution in Facebook and download yours. Get it. Marcel Rose has it up there and you can get it. Now, let's move on, Mike, to something that Randy French gave us this week.
We're all in trouble.
Yeah. What do you say? Now, he says, sin separates you from God. That's the beginning of, a chapter in his new book.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we hear about this new book, the more we like it.
That is for sure. We're looking forward to its publication. It's turning into an Encyclopedia Britannica on the gospel, though.
It is, and I think he's already, he told me the other day, he's already shaved half of it off. So there's his second book, I guess.
Exactly. He'll entitle it The Shavings.
He quotes Romans 8:38, "For I am persuaded that neither death, life, angels, governmental, religious principles, powers, things present or things to come, or height, depth, or any other ordinance or rule shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord."
Ugh.
Whoa, there's a mouthful. So he says, Christianity says that man was created in sin and in God's image.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. That's an interesting dichotomy. The gospel says the new man, that is, everyone created after the cross, is created in Christ as one with God and is now the very image of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Here is my point. Christianity in Hebrews 13 and 8 says Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. But I say if God said it in the Old Testament, it is still true today. I don't understand this.
That's what people are saying to him.
Oh, really? Okay. Yep. And that really was him, not me. The gospel says the same, Greek word is autos, one, these all together with the other, mine own self, the same, yourselves, he, she, he's quoting Strong's here, I'm pretty sure, quoting Strong's mm-hmm. definition. The word autos in the Greek, the word we get automobile and automatic, auto, simply means it is an attachment to another word which gives the other word meaning. So very often when it says, and God himself did this, what he's saying is a kai theos auto, and God himself. So it attaches to another word. He's doing well here with his Greek. I think this guy's going to beat me on Greek pretty soon. So here is how this verse actually reads in the original Greek. Hebrews 13:8. Jesus Christ, who is one with God and all creation, who will remain one with God and the Son forever, the same as yesterday, today, and forever, according to God's covenant with his Son.
Mm.
Well, that's something, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, so here's a verse that it's always used as a challenge to anything gospel. It's a challenge to the gospel of peace. It's a challenge to the gospel of grace, that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I remember this verse really well. It's the first verse I ever memorized out of the Bible. And we had a class, and just to show you just exactly how old I am, we used to have a guy come around to our public schools and offer Bibles They'd give him time in class and encourage the kids to memorize Bible verses and hold up all the pretty Bibles. If you memorize this verse, you'd get this size of Bible. If you memorize that, you'd get this size of Bible. And so, man, I wanted that Bible really, really bad. So the verse, and they gave us the verses that we had to memorize, and this was one of them. Jesus Christ the same, yesterday, today, and forever. I practiced, but then we had to go in, and the guy came back, and then we had to be tested in front of the class as to what whether or not we memorized the verse. And so I was going for the big Bible. So I was in the middle of my test, and I said, Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and the day after that.
Oh, wow. No.
I didn't get the big Bible. I got the little dinky thing that fits in your front pocket in your shirt.
Oh, they were giving away Gideon's, I guess, were they?
Yeah, that was another PTCD in my life.
those rascals just couldn't understand a modern English paraphrase.
No, exactly. I'm sure I got it more right than the King James Version did.
I would not. Yeah, without checking.
But I was trying to get a King James Version of the Bible, so you can't do that.
Well, mate, I posted it up on Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution in Facebook, the group. I mean, it's there. I posted the picture of Paul's original King James Bible. It's I think it sold on eBay for something like $5 million. But
it must have been the one Jesus gave him.
Oh, of course. I never asked myself where he got it. Of course. Okay, so let me see. Randy goes on and says, God is the same as yesterday, but the covenant or contractual agreement has changed from a covenant between God and man, which covenant man broke every single time, to a covenant between God and his son. This is a covenant that is not ours to keep and will never be broken. You have been taken a prisoner of Christ against your will, because it was God's will to be one with man since the foundations of the earth.
Mm-hmm. So Jesus Christ, one, yesterday, today, and forever.
How about that?
Yeah, I like that.
Mm.
And he's right. It does encompass all of everything that we teach at this point. This is actually an affirmation of the gospel in that this all started before the foundation of the world. So Jesus Christ has been one. He has been numero uno. He has been one, the one, and has been one itself with God and with us since the foundations of the world. Wow. Good stuff.
Great stuff, Randy.
Can I get an amen? Yeah.
If you are a member of our GR private group, and why shouldn't you be? That is Gospel Revolution private group, which is a Facebook group. Jeff Robertson this week wrote, one should take the myriad of disagreements between Paul and the other writers of the New Testament books seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think there's any other way to take them. But Jeff makes a great point.
Yeah.
One should examine why Paul preached a gospel of grace and peace the others did not. One should also, first and foremost, remember that the center of the gospel is Jesus Christ and his work, not us and our work.
Mm-hmm.
If one is a lover of Christ, one should believe Jesus meant what he said when he said he came to save the world, not a few.
Mm-hmm.
He said he came to fulfill the scriptures, which means nothing should be left to fulfill if he came to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's some pretty clean logic there.
It is.
One should then question why Paul, who says Jesus saved all and fulfilled the scriptures, meaning the law and the prophets, when the named authors of the other, he says named in inverted commas, and he does well to do that because nobody can prove who wrote Matthew, mm-hmm. Mark, John, Revelation, James, Peter, Jude. Nobody can actually prove it, but it's just accepted. They're the named authors. One should then question why Paul said Jesus saved all and fulfilled the scriptures, meaning the law and the prophets, while the named authors of the other New Testament epistles say the opposite of both Paul and what Jesus said he came to do. And according to Jesus, his dying words were, "It is finished." So either we conclude that Jesus is the Savior prophesied by the Old Testament and proclaim the good news, or we try to make the books and verses of the New Testament by different authors agree when they cannot.
Mm-hmm.
And then deny that Jesus saved the world by telling people they have to accept Jesus before what he did 2,000 years ago will save them personally on their own individual basis. This is good writing, Jeff.
Definitely is. These are good bullet points of the gospel, if you will. Things that we need to be reminded of on a continual basis. This is a good CPR email, if you will. You could read down through this and you could get saved by reading this because it reminds us of the validity and the facts of the story of the gospel and the conclusions of that story. This saves the soul. The gospel is designed to be interwoven into our way of thinking. I guarantee you, if your view of the future is rooted in the gospel, it will save your soul.
I keep getting saved over and over again here, and it's been glorious. I'm excited to be a part of all this.
You will not live in fear about the future at all. If you accept what the gospel says about you and God, you're going to be delivered from all kinds of PTCD. That's for sure. That's post-traumatic Christian disorder. If you accept what the gospel says about others, there's going to begin to be a homogenization, if you will, between you and others. The way you associate, relate, interact just begins to change. It's still happening to me right up into this week, Don. Now, as of this PowerCast, I am now 65 years old. This PowerCast has come out on Thursday. That means I have now turned 65 years old. And my goodness, do I feel different.
Oh? Different? Because you're the same age as me for a month?
Surely longer than that.
Don't call me. I've told you not to call me Shirley before, not in front of others.
But I said Shirley, sir.
Hey, listen. You're the one who keeps bringing up your birthday, and I understand that. And I want to ask you if you remember this.
I really was encouraged while the summit was going on to write something for Michael for his birthday, because I knew his birthday was coming up, and I know he's been claiming to be 60, and he's really not even 59 at the time, but we'll give him that. We round up, okay, except where taxes and bills are due, and then we round down. So here we go with something I wrote for Michael for his birthday. It's called Mr. 59. Happy birthday, Mr. 59. You're over the hill and way out of line. You're ancient, archaic, way too old, but oh so precious like refined gold. A man of the gospel, simple and pure, searching for truth, pursuing it for sure. Righteous, holy, and without blame, shunning evil, fortune, and fame. Trusting in Christ, following your heart, the only way to begin, the best place to start. We, the revolutionaries, one and all, salute you this day, Mr. Big and Tall. Happy birthday to the grand poobah of the gospel revolution. Kimo Doe, August 16th, 2011.
Thank
Happy
you.
Birthday, Michael.
Thank you, Rich.
You're welcome, sir. We love you, Michael. You know that.
You know, the funny thing about this all of this stuff is that when anybody in this group cries, it's because we're so happy we don't know what to do with ourselves.
You're darn right.
So that's what our friend Richard John Mull had to say. Does that mean I've got to write you a poem now for your 65th? It'll probably be something like, Mikey Williams, 65, it's amazing you're alive, or something like that.
You know, it's amazing how perspective has changed as I've aged. I feel very fortunate to be aging with a gospel perspective. And I tell you, it is just, you talk about the upside down kingdom. It really is amazing. You know, at 65, you begin to evaluate your life, what you've done, what you should have done, what you wish you would have done, what you might do in the future, how much time you have left to do it. But one of the things, what's kind of rambling around in me as I'm turning 65, and that is that I've really learned to view most of my successes as failures. And all of my failures as success. I can do that freely because the appraisal of my successes and failures have been done by the internal kingdom and not the external kingdom.
Hey.
This also works in my favor, as my failures have far outweighed my successes in life. So suddenly,
you figured out a way to make it work for you.
Suddenly, I'm tremendously successful. Always have been, because I see my successes as failures and my failures as successes. Jesus said, he that would lose his life would gain it. He that would gain his life would lose it.
And Paul said, I glory in my weaknesses.
There you go. Hey.
No one else will, but you, at least you can have a shot at it.
I can do it. So I now know that I have been a tremendous success throughout my life.
There you go, mate. So happy birthday. And I was so gratified to hear our friend Richard Mull read you your little 60th birthday, I think, poem. It was good. Now, before we go any further, know this, that we have up on our website, www.gospelrevolution.com, we have some 400-odd videos, some 12 years every week, a podcast. We've got some excellent free products right on our front page. All you've got to do is click on them to download them. We have everything up there, forums, articles, seminars, radios. Videos. We got 24/7 radio happening, thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands. Facebook, podcasts, we've got it all just for you. www.gospelrevolution.com. And a little house out there because we like ourselves just that much. Now, Mike, 2 weeks ago we recorded a session and the technical difficulties overcame us, and we've still got technical difficulties, but you, because we're just so good at this, family, it's going to seem seamless to you. You are not even going to know that a 1.5 hour or 1 hour podcast actually took something like, gosh, I don't know.
3 days. It took,
yeah, there you go. So we think that we've gotten on top of the tech grinches that overtook our two-week-old podcast on apocalypticism, but we're going to bring it to you now because we just liked it so much.
Yay.
Now, apocalypticism, Christianity has it.
Mm-hmm.
Islam has it.
Mm-hmm.
Hindus have it. What is it? It generally is associated with these thoughts. A last days.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last days. Some kind of huge judgment. If you're Islamic, it'll be a judgment against non-Islamicists. If you're a Christian, it'll be against everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's associated with the coming of a great prophet. In Islam it is. In Christianity it is, the great prophet being Jesus himself. These are the hallmarks of apocalypticism,
mm-hmm.
or that which believes the apocalyptic view of things.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus taught it absolutely. Jesus absolutely taught there was going to be a last days.
Yep.
And in that last day, some pretty bad stuff was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Peter and James taught it literally. Now, here is where the rub comes. Jesus taught it as a futuristic event, and Peter and James taught it literally as a future coming event. So they were in absolute agreement with Jesus. Or were they?
Mm-hmm.
John spoke about it again as a future event and quite specifically in the book of Revelation. But Peter, James, and John all taught it as a coming event. Paul taught it as a finished event, and he taught about it dialectically, which means he would present one side of the argument, then he'd present the other side of the argument, so he'd give you a thesis, then he'd give you an antithesis or an antithesis, and then he'd synthesize it down into the truth, so you had a synthesis.
Mm-hmm.
He taught it dialectically, but here is the rub. He taught it as a done deal.
Yes.
He taught it as a done deal. Jesus taught it as a future deal. Who was right, Michael?
Well, Jesus taught it as a future deal to his lifespan and also told us exactly what deal it was. And Paul taught it looking backward at Jesus's lifespan. And Jesus made that very clear in Matthew 24 all the way through. The interesting thing is here are these disciples that wrote about this apocalyptic event. And they were the ones who asked Jesus about when the end of the world would come.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't asking about the end of the planet. They were asking about the end of the temple, because that was what they had presented to Jesus. And Jesus then begins to tell them about when this temple age would end. That's the only thing that Jesus was talking about. But, you know, we shouldn't be surprised, because Jesus said they never understood anything he told them. All you have to do is check the Greek to see what the term world is. Three different terms are used in Matthew chapter 24 for the word world, at least three. And it's important what those terms mean. None of them mean cosmos. That's not what Jesus was telling them was coming to an end. Jesus was saying that an age is coming to an end, an apocalypse.
And that word cosmos simply means the earth and all of its inhabitants.
Yes. And that's not what it's talking about. And yet every preaching and teaching you will ever hear about, quote, the apocalypse is going to be inferred that it's about the cosmos. And it's not about the cosmos. It's about a specific period of time.
Whether Earth's going to be burned up with a fervent heat and all of that sort of stuff,
mm-hmm.
Most people take it to mean the cosmos or this Earth and its inhabitants. I see what you mean.
Let's look at that. That's interesting, because it is Peter who talked about everything being burned up with fervent heat.
I think Peter was a bit of a drama queen. If you don't mind me saying. I think he just, he had a penchant for the dramatic. Okay, so in 2 Peter 3:10, I'll just read the verse for us. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief. See that future tense. He's using a future mm-hmm. tense. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with a fervent heat. The earth also
mm-hmm.
and the works that are therein shall be burned up.
So what is the term earth?
The word earth he uses is actually, it means the dirt you grow plants in, soil. Gay is the word. And it just simply means...
The earth.
The earth, yeah.
Yeah. In describing this apocalyptic event, Peter is not using the terms that Jesus was using. Jesus never said that the earth or even the cosmos would be a part of this end. Jesus said that the age, a specific age, and that term in its context means a Jewish period of time.
Now, you're talking about the word aeon.
Yes, the term aeon in Matthew 24.
So the three words are cosmos, meaning the earth and all of its inhabitants, mm-hmm. not the dirt, but the world and all its inhabitants.
Right.
The aeon, which means an indeterminate period of time. It might have an end, it may not have an end. And you're going to tell us the third word that is translated as world. Now, let me just say this. When you take three different Greek words, not just different, but thoroughly different Greek words.
Oh, yeah.
And interpret them all as the same English word, hell, you can make anything mean anything.
Yes. Yeah, these are not only just totally spelled differently, their definitions and what they mean are completely different, and yet they come into the English as one word, not meaning that word at all.
They did the same thing with the word hell.
Exactly. Mm. We have a lot of distortions here in Peter's apocalyptic view. He calls the day of the Lord as a future event. The day of the Lord, according to the prophets, had already passed by the time Peter started writing this down. The day of the Lord was the day of the cross. That was the prophesied day of the Lord. Just try doing a search, the day of the Lord, and go back and look and see that the prophets gave this a very specific time frame. Jesus made reference to it. Paul made reference to it. Jesus used this comparison to the flood. Isaiah prophesied about the flood and said the flood was the same as the cross being the final judgment. And here Peter's got it off into the future someplace. So let's go back to the guy who started all of this, who was Daniel. Now, others around him, Ezekiel had some apocalyptic teaching. Two or three of the other prophets had this. Isaiah certainly had some in his also. But Daniel is the one who has risen to the surface to really give us a glimpse at this. So we have to go back to Daniel. Now, we've covered Daniel, and we've covered Daniel, and we've covered Daniel, but guess what we're going to do today?
You've got me there, mate.
Cover Daniel.
Uh-huh.
This is where it all started. Daniel chapter 9, verse 24. Why go back over it again? Because if we go back to Daniel, we can get clarity about what Jesus taught about this issue, about what Paul taught about this issue. We can get clarity about what Peter, James, and John taught about this issue. We can get clarity on all of them. Let's read through this. And Don, I'm going to ask you just to read through verse 24.
Daniel says, 70 weeks are determined upon your people and upon your holy city, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy.
70 weeks are determined. Now, Don, what does the word determined mean?
It's the word chatak in Hebrew, and I don't think this is the last time it's going to be used in this passage, but chatak simply means to be cut off.
So there's going to be 70 weeks to a cutting off point. Now, remember the verses in Matthew 24? Matthew 24 says, except those days be shortened, and that word means cut off. Except those days. You say, oh, but Mike, it says that this is going to happen, that's going to happen. But you forget that it also says in Matthew 24, except these days be cut off, no flesh would be spared.
Then what are we doing here?
Thank God for the gospel. Because it's either all or nothing. All these things would have taken place. Jesus is saying, oh, man, when this happens, let not him that is in Judea try to go to someplace else, run to the mountains, and all of these things. And that's where the verse comes then, except these days be cut off, no flesh should be spared. Now, Jesus was telling us this is what's headed toward the earth. Judgment is barreling toward the earth. It is going to consume everything to where that no flesh shall be saved. Except there's a cutting off point for this. If it gets cut short or cut off, it being cut off is the salvation of the world. And man, I tell you, I've wondered for years what it would be like to have a Hollywood computer graphics movie set up to see this in action, to watch as the prophets talked about the judgment gathering from the four winds of the earth, circling the globe, and the violence and the anger and the wrath, and it getting ready to be poured out upon the whole earth and consume all flesh, people running toward the mountains, trying to flee and get out of the way. And all of a sudden, something begins to take the four winds of the wrath and anger and judgment that had to come to the planet, and all of it begin to be funneled down toward one place at Golgotha. And the total cutting short of all of this took place on the cross with the death of one man for all. Who is it coming to? All. Jesus died for all. Where do we not get the picture? This is the gospel in and of itself. Everyone that extends this apocalyptic view past the cross does not know the gospel at all. At all. At all. 70 weeks are determined. Now, they're determined up on thy people and the holy city. God determined this. This is not in conjunction with or in agreement with the people or the holy city. This is no more in agreement with the people than it is the holy city. The only thing you can do to a city is do something to it. The city itself can't agree with you, and neither can the people in the context of this. 70 weeks. This is obviously a time-sensitive prophecy. If it had a break in it, I think God would have sense enough to say there's going to be 69 weeks, and then there will be an indeterminate amount of time between that and a last week.
Now, the reason that Mike's making such a commotion about this is because modern Christianity is rife with all manner of theories about there are 70 weeks here in Daniel, but the last week's not actually come yet. Mm-hmm. And so that's what Mike's addressing.
Yeah. Now, if we accept what it says, what is the culmination of these? It's determined. This is the last 70 weeks of predestination. Wow. Get that, folks. Jesus made it clear that this started before the foundation of the world. He said, I'm here to reveal mysteries that were established between me and the Father before the foundation of the world. Paul taught on it before the foundation of the world. Predestination started before God created the cosmos. Now, here we have the very end of the predestined time. This is the entire framework of predestination. Now, what Christianity has done has bastardized the beginning of predestination, and they've bastardized the end of predestination. They don't accept anything about predestination that the scriptures teach. They do not accept that everybody was predestined to be in Christ before the foundation of the world. They just do not accept it. They refuse to believe it. They bastardize it. Then they bastardize the end of this predestined period of time, which is marked by Daniel as 70 weeks until a cutoff point, until a docking, until an end.
Until a specific, willful terminus, nothing after it. It's a cutting off.
Yes, and it is that clear. Now, this is determined upon thy people and upon the holy city to finish the transgression. Number one, Christianity is still talking about transgression of the law. Why are they still talking about transgression of the law? Because they know that the 70th week of Daniel does away with it. It does a finish. What does the word finish mean here?
It means...
Maybe it don't really mean finish.
It means to fully restrict.
Well, I guess it means finish then, doesn't it?
Mr. Strong's says it means finish, forbid, keep back, or keep, refrain, restrain, retain, shut up, be stayed, or withhold.
Wow.
Seems pretty clear to me.
Yeah. And he says to finish the transgression. You see, the gospel disproves Christianity. This one line disproves Christianity.
Well, let's have a look at that word transgression. It is a masculine noun, and it is singular. Mm-hmm. So, and it means sin. Uh-huh. In other words, to restrict sin is the best translation for this. To finish the transgression, it is restricting sin, not sins. That's coming in the next phrase, but it's putting an end to sin.
Oh, man, that's powerful. So to put an end to sin, to finish sin, and to make an end of sins. Well, now that sounds redundant. But now remember, in the scriptures, there's two things called sin. One is the transgression of Adam, which is imputed to the entire world. The other one is transgression of law, or the breaking of laws. So this first one, even though it has transgression there, it is singular. So by the fact that it is singular, we know that it's talking about Adam's transgression is going to be wiped out. And then what's going to happen, Don? And to make an end of sins. Why are we getting rid of transgression and then getting rid of sins?
Well, let's have a quick look at that word. It is, yes, it's a noun, feminine noun, and it is a plural, not singular, so it is as separated from transgression.
So the 70 weeks are going to do away with sin and sins. Sin the condition and sin the actions. Goodness gracious. this is utterly amazing. He says, and to make reconciliation for iniquity. So we have sins, and iniquity. Now he's saying that not only is the sin going to be cut off, it's going to be done away with, but reconciliation for iniquity. Now, what's the word iniquity?
The word iniquity is translated by Mr. Strong's as... perversity or moral evil, it means depravity. So to make reconciliation or to actually, that's an interesting word. James Strong says kafar means to cover, specifically with bitumen, to cover up, in a spiritual sense, to expiate or condone or placate or cancel. So it could be translated and to make depravity invisible.
Wow. So not only do we have a 70 weeks determining that Adam's sin would be wiped out, transgression of law would be wiped out. How can you wipe out transgression of law if there's still law there? Wouldn't you transgress the law again if the law was still there? You see, Jesus didn't die for everything we did. Jesus died to take away the law that held what we did against us. And he also died to take away the sin that was imputed to us, which we didn't do. Then he brought reconciliation for those that were affected by those two things. A beautiful story. It sounds exactly like the cross to me. Goodness gracious. I'm trying to figure out where this event is going to take place in the Christian world future.
Yeah, really.
What apocalypse is going to cause these things to happen? I mean, was the cross nothing? You see, Christianity makes the cross nothing.
Well, you have to ask yourself, what on earth did Jesus achieve? I mean, when you look at...
a new religion. We know what he achieved.
Yeah. Apparently, it's just a new religion. It keeps the Ten Commandments from an old religion. It invents a few new ways of getting through to God because we don't have sacrifices anymore. I guess we've just got to, say a magic little prayer.
And men still born in sin.
Men still born in sin, as Jeff Robertson said earlier in the program.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah. Are you there?
Well, this thing just can't hold on to a connection. It's crazy.
Yeah, and it seems to be getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah.
But we'll just see.
Well, let's try to get through this.
Okay, friend.
And there's another and. Man, these ands are amazing here. Each and every and leaves Christianity in the dust. Let's do an and. And to bring in everlasting righteousness. Well, that does away with Christianity because Christianity is still trying to make people righteous. And to seal up the vision and the prophecy. Now here's another and. Now, what does this and do? We bring in everlasting righteousness. So righteousness is brought in to not leave. It's here. It's not going away. And to seal up, so it's the same word, the vision and the prophecy. Wow. So do you see where it is absolutely, it is vulgar. It is vulgarly disingenuous to separate the 70 weeks of Daniel from to say that 69 were up to the cross and now the last is on hold. It's vulgar. It's vulgar to the scriptures. It's vulgar to truth. It's vulgar to logic. And to seal up the vision and the prophecy. And, here's one more and to anoint the most holy. Wow. Do you realize if the 70th week of Daniel is not fulfilled, Jesus is not Lord? Who is the most holy? I think that's Christ.
Here we are back again. And family, just in case you're wondering what that means, this is our sixth or seventh attempt to get through this podcast. What is happening is that we have some Skype is playing up and Mike's IP on his laptop has just given up the ghost, so it keeps trying to reconnect and subsequently tosses him off Skype and me into a game of chess or replenishing my coffee or something else. It'll take 15 minutes or so. So hopefully this week will be the very last shadow of this that we see. But I'm just going to go back to where I think we were.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back, Mike.
This is kind of like the way Christianity teaches the 70th week of Daniel. It was a straight through prophecy, and they said they put a halt to it and waited. So we do the PowerCast on Monday. We always do it on Monday, but now here we are on Wednesday morning up. So my goodness, maybe the Lord's trying to show us something here about this split up in Daniel.
Well, at least we're biblical in the way we're doing it. You just had a couple of glitches in your voice. I'm just going to let them go to air so our family knows just the difficulties we're working with here. But nothing I can't fix in edit.
Good.
Okay. We went through the verse, 70 weeks are determined upon your people and upon your holy city to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins, to finish the transgression, singular, and make an end of sins, plural, and to make reconciliation for iniquity. And you mentioned that God was in Christ. I think it's in Corinthians there, Paul says, reconciling the world to himself, and to bring in everlasting righteousness. I would like to, and we actually went through this, but I think we need to just press this point. That word everlasting is fascinating. It's to bring in everlasting righteousness. And as I'm reading that, I'm thinking of Paul saying world without end or aeon without ends, age without an end. And that word means, that word everlasting, when you have a look at Strong's and read it in its context, it means a vanishing point way off in the distance. As far as you can see, it's just a vanishing point.
Yeah.
That is how much righteousness is to be brought in.
Yeah, so as long as you can see, it will be as far as you can see, no matter which generation it is that's looking at it.
It'll be like tomorrow never comes.
Yeah, and so like a billion years from now, it will still be off in the distance, still not able to reach the end of it. Yay!
You gotta love it.
Daniel 9:24 is the gospel in a verse. This may be the most spectacular prophecy that includes all of the gospel there is in the entire Bible, and especially in the Old Testament and especially in the prophets. That's why Christianity has to break it up into 69 weeks that went on hold over 2,000 years ago for Christianity to be in effect at all. This last week of Daniel cannot be fulfilled. This entire prophecy was divided up to create space for a religion. If this prophecy is not broken up, as Christianity has done, there is no space for religion in here. It's all left out. And the only thing you can do is see righteousness from generation to generation as far as the eye could possibly see, and we'll never see the end of it.
We're not going to go before I get some information here about how you, or how do I put this nicely, how you rang up our family and wrung some money out of them for the pledge drive.
Well, I have to tell you, Don, this has been a wonderful experience. I got to talk to the best people on the planet. I'm telling you, and that includes those who gave and those who were unable to at this time. I could give you a story from every phone call. That is the honest truth. And everybody that is listening that hears their name on here, you know I could tell a story from the phone call. It would be fantastic. I was nourished. We had a wonderful time on the phone, and it was a good pledge drive. I want everybody to know the generosity of the gospel revolutionaries that are out there given. We don't have the individual amounts, but I do have the total amounts.
All right.
Like I said, this was a lot of fun.
Can I ask you this before you tell us that?
Sure.
What are our costs per quarter?
I can tell you that our cost exceeds our income.
Okay. Can we say by how much?
We normally run short by the end of the quarter by about $8,000 to $10,000.
That's what I was wondering. Okay.
Yes.
Sorry. So this $600,000 we got.
$6,050 in one-time gifts. Monthly pledges, we had at least two brand new ones. We had folks that were increasing their monthly, and that was $410 we increased on a monthly basis.
Oh, wow.
That one is one that we need to work on, and this one over the long term, of course, will do plenty. It does a tremendous amount for us. Now,
wow.
If you take in the yearly amount that we increase from that and the one-time gifts, the summer pledge drive comes up to a total of $10,906. Hey! Thank you, guys.
Hang on. Just in the middle of that amount, it glitched. Say that again. How much?
Yay.
No, not yay. How much was
the
it?
The amount. The total amount of $10,960 for the summer pledge drive.
All right. Now you can say, yay.
And thank you, guys. This really was a lot of fun. I look forward to calling you again. I'll definitely be calling you again in the next quarter. Everybody's got my phone number now. I mean, even if they didn't go on and get it from the website, they have it on their phone. I encouraged everybody, just go ahead and just log this in as my phone number, so that if you ever need to call, if you'll know who it is that's calling next time instead of a number coming up you don't recognize. So, again, thank you, guys. This has been a real help. Again, just want to thank everyone for participating. Thank you for taking the calls. We did have people that did not respond to the phone calls, but I'm sure there are people who are out on vacation, a lot of possible scenarios. So if you've come back home and you noticed that message, for you, the pledge drive is still on. We're still waiting for that return call. So
we've got the most wonderful people in the world, as you said. Tell me, do we have any new executive producers official sponsors, or do we need to get any more pharasectomy certificates out, Michael?
I'm sure we'll figure all that out and let you know.
Wonderful. Okay. So, Michael, who are these good people?
Well, hang on to your hat. I'm going to read through them. I'm learning, so be patient with me. You're not going to hear the town, but you are going to hear the state that everyone is from.
And if you don't hear your name and you did give into this pledge drive, ring up Michael.
Oh,
and
please,
make a
yes.
Big, yeah.
I've gone through this as thoroughly as I know how. So please, if there's some way that we missed your contribution as far as putting it on the list, number one, it's not just so that we can let everybody know. I need to know what I did wrong. So if
and don't let him down, family. Tell him.
Exactly. So make sure that you let me know if you do not hear your name on here. Number one on our list today is Richard and Pat Salonen from Michigan. Number two is Glenn Buchholz from Minnesota. We then have Howard and Amanda Wirch from Manitoba, Canada. Pep Washburn from Wisconsin. Bud and Ruth Ramsey from North Dakota. Helen Gwinnett from Alberta, Canada. Tom and Linda Wilby from New Brunswick, Canada. John Van Sickle from Florida. Ted and Pat Winsett. Those are pastors, Ted and Pat Winsett from Alabama. Billy Thompson, Arizona. Cookie Davy Duck, Alberta, Canada. Jerry and Susan Berman from Florida. We have our Mr. Anonymous, as always, from Alberta, Canada. Suzanne Johnson from Wisconsin. Steve and Mary Keller out of New Mexico. Elizabeth Ward. Now, I've got to tell you just a little story here. Elizabeth's husband answered. He told me, he said, Mike, he said, after all these years, I'm beginning to come around to your view here. These people are amazing people from Seattle, Washington. And he had expressed to me the last time I was there that he was blown away by the redemption of the world. He just could not go there. So he believed, and I said, I think you've come more than a little closer. I think you've totally jumped in the pond here.
Sorry, that was a glitch. So say, go back to what you said to him.
I told him, I said, I think you've done more than just gotten a little closer to where I am. I think you've jumped into the pond altogether. So then he put me on the phone with Elizabeth. Elizabeth was giving her contribution, and he yelled out from the background, make that double, one for me.
Oh, far out. You never know. See, it's thin threads from all that time ago. How about that?
Exactly. So we have a new full-time gospel revolutionary. I guess you could have said he was a part-time gospel revolutionary until then.
He was a sleeper.
Tom Tonsky from Ohio. Bob and Linda Parks in Alabama. Don and Judy Murphy from Montana. Bill and Jeannie Schultz from California. Mary Kustra from Florida. Leroy Burrell, Wisconsin. Doug Bowman from Arkansas. George Najjar, a voice we've not heard from in several years, is back on board and a contributor.
Wonderful.
From Ohio. Mary Lou Kustra, Florida. Brad and Holly Wilson from Arizona. Robert Collier, Texas. Albert Vitale from Georgia. Muriel Alexandrowski from Florida. Yvonne DeClean, Wisconsin. Patty Holzclaw, Kentucky. Vicki Davis, Florida. Rick Breeden, Wisconsin. Luke Vaz, California. Danny Meniscannons, twice.
All right.
From California.
All right.
Yeah. Robert Vacanti, Minnesota.
And that's why he gets his questions answered. Sorry, who was the last person?
Robert Vacanti, Minnesota. Bernard Rouse from Michigan. Doug Salonen, Wisconsin. Brand Dillard from Virginia. Randy Johnson in North Carolina. Linda and Thomas Valland. Ron Fox from California. Judy Tanini from Alabama. Roy Muse, Nova Scotia. Lisa Spurka from Maryland. Kim Morris in Illinois. Enan Ogden, also Robert DeVries, Rayford Cadell. Now, that one was from Belize.
Ah, yes, Rayford, yes.
Yes. Derek Kukler, Miguel Saras, Paul Vickers, and Vicky Schoen. And that is the end of our list.
All right.
A nice full list.
I think
too.
It's the longest list we've had for a little while. And thanks to your efforts and just locking yourself in the house for a few weeks and making phone calls with a stint in the hospital in the middle, you've done pretty well, mate. We expect twice as much next time out of you.
You're bringing down the whip, huh?
I learned that years ago. Somebody said to me about the boss, he said, don't come in and do it all at once. Leave room for improvement every single month, and then they'll say that you're steady and stable. keep a couple of sails up your sleeve, he said to me.
Exactly. Thank you guys so much. We love you and appreciate you so much.
Thank you, family. You're the reason this gospel is going out. If prayer for you is Thanksgiving, I'd be taking that list of names and being thankful about it, because we certainly are. These are the people who make it possible for us to get this gospel out around the world 24/7. These are the people who make it possible for the radio to be going out from the Netherlands 24/7. These are the people who make it possible for us to help plant the gospel in Kenya, in the middle of Africa. These are the people who really are sowing into, and I hate to use that word because it comes from the old days, but it's not sowing to reap. They're just putting part of their, you know, money is time. You can buy time with money. That's what you do when you get a babysitter. And with these people who have an income, wherever their income is coming from, they are spending their life into that income to get that income, and they're sowing their life into this ministry. And we're very grateful. Family, I think it's about time that we left you.
And we're so glad we had this time together.
Oh, Lord.
It's my birthday. I get to sing.
You know, I haven't said happy birthday. And today is actually your birthday.
It is actually, as we are recording. I woke up today, 65 years old. Well, the event doesn't actually take place till 7:30 this evening, but...
Okay. Well, just there. I just wanted to be able to say that I wasted 2 seconds of your time on your birthday with silence. And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Remember, orthodoxy is oxymoronic. If orthodoxy was to be trusted in the least, then there wouldn't be 40,000 bloody versions of it. There'd only be one version of it. And what's more likely, do you think, that real orthodoxy might be found in one of those multiple thousands of versions, or in your own heart and mind, pre-planted there before you were born? Don't forget to visit Amazon Books and get your copy of Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. In it, Mike lays out the gospel in simple, straightforward language and weaves it with stories from his personal experiences. And you know Mike, and you know his stories. I'm telling you, all of his stories must be in this book, I'm sure. But they led him to the place of ultimate ease where he now lives. Hardcover $27, paperback $15. Hold on, don't leave yet, don't switch off. $3.03 for a Kindle version. You can't do better than that. Go stick your hand in your pocket and go get it. $3.03, come on, you can afford that. We run a value for value model here, and it costs us time, cash and energy to research, produce and maintain this free information. So call our Florida office on area code 561-557-1329. If you have a question, call from inside the USA. It's 234 area code, and 564-0971 is the number. For outside the United States, the number is your international dialing code followed by 123-456-4097-1. So now it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Eva, Alabama.
And it's good night from Michael Williams right here in South Florida in Palm Beach Gardens. Again, thank you guys for participating in the pledge drive this summer. We're getting ready to go to Michigan early next month in September. That is another cost that you guys have helped us arrange, helped us pay for, and going up and doing some videos at Randy French's studio there in Grand Haven, Michigan. And I'll be turning around, coming back, spending one day at home, and then getting on another plane and flying out to our Canada conference, which we're looking very forward to, where our guest speaker there on Saturday night is going to be Wade Brewer. Anybody that is in Canada that has heard the name Wade Brewer, everybody knows he's my favorite teacher.
You are in for a treat.
Oh, and you are indeed. He has the entire Saturday night session, so make sure to make plans to be there.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Better, even technologically.
Absolutely.